Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. My guest today is Matt Leininger, author of the IBM Center Report, Using Online Tools to Engage and Be Engaged by the Public. Matt, your report identifies 10 tactics most commonly used to foster an engagement with the public, matching up scenarios with the tactics and online tools that seem most appropriate in a given situation. Would you elaborate on the first tactic, which is developing documents collaboratively using wikis? Would you tell us about the tactic, how it's used, what it offers, and any specific limitations associated with it?
Sure. And the kind of overall thing to kind of keep in mind here is that you're usually going to need kind of more than one of these things. So usually what you've got in any given kind of engagement situation, you've usually got more than one goal, and you also have to kind of be cognizant of what the people you're trying to engage, you know, what their goals might be. So these things tend to be more holistic, more well-rounded, or at least more successful when they're more well-rounded. So it's often the case that no single one of these is going to be enough, but that a combination of a couple or several of them might be very helpful. So the first thing is kind of using wikis, and some people may have some experience with wikis, but basically what a wiki is a document that people can log in and see and then make changes to and to edit over time. And the way that the technology works is to kind of keep track of who made what change when, so that you've got a sense of an evolving document. And it's a way of kind of doing joint editing for something in a way that's very transparent and allows a whole bunch of people to kind of be part of the process. So it's great for situations where you're trying to actually create a document, a plan for the agency or for the community or for a particular issue area, and it's something that will kind of not require as much staff. And one of the kind of the virtues of it is that, unlike doing this in a offline world, the staff time is far reduced when you're actually being able to do it with this kind of more automatic kind of technology. Well, one thing, and this is true of a lot of these online technologies, is it's got to be something that will kind of reach out to people to some extent. So it's got to get into their email inboxes, basically. That if you simply kind of set up a site or a wiki or anything else like that and ask people to continue to come back to it again and again, they generally aren't going to do that. That they will, their participation is going to wane far more quickly. Whereas if it's something that's set up so that any change to the document for in a wiki, for example, actually that's kind of, they're being notified on some kind of regular basis that this document is evolving, and then that gives them kind of the prompt to go from their email to the document and see what's happening. It's a kind of a general principle for all of these kinds of things, is setting up a kind of a standalone site is never enough. It's got to be something that kind of actually gets to people. It's more kind of nudges them along the way.
As a follow-up, would you describe an example of the tactic in use today?
Well, the San Jose one, actually, that was probably the best one. There's actually a national one in New Zealand, though, that was really interesting, where they actually revised the Police Act, which had been in force for 50 years, and they invited people to kind of actually collaboratively rewrite the Police Act for the country, using the kind of the original law first and then allowing people to edit it as they went. It was something that actually was at least 4 million people actually checked in at some point in the process of kind of rewriting this law for New Zealand.
Matt, your second tactic is creating shared workspace for citizens. What does this mean, and could you give us an example of this tactic in use today?
Sure. Well, it's giving people some structure to surround their efforts. So if you've got a set of people, a small committee of some kind, a task force that are kind of determined to work on a particular issue, you're kind of giving them kind of an online kind of workspace where they can kind of regularly interact, can kind of find more information, that can kind of stay connected. Some of the basic kind of forms of these, things like Google Groups, which people are Ning, those are two very common ones that a lot of people have some experience with. Some of the newer ones, which are really more focused on kind of public engagement needs, are things like civicevolution.org, which is a really nice one that kind of blends in a number of different media. One example of this, where civic evolution actually was used, is in Australia, actually, where they created a whole bunch of teams of people to work on different kind of problem-solving ideas for this city of Geraldton Greena, which is in the western part of Australia.
Matt, another tactic I found interesting calls for the use of quote-unquote serious games to generate interest, understanding, and input. What do you mean by serious games? And would you tell us a little bit about the tactic, what it offers, its specific limitations, and any examples of its use in place today?
Well, one thing that I like about this one is that it gets to one of the real opportunities of this kind of work, which is to make it fun. I mean, I think one of the mistakes we've made is to treat all this political stuff as always being completely dry and sober and dreary, and that in fact, the more that you can kind of mix in different aspects of fun, you know, socializing, music, food, or in this case, games, the better off you is, the more participation you're going to get and the more enthusiasm you'll get from people. In this one, you know, the idea is to kind of create something that is fun to use that will give people more information about an issue or allow them to kind of give input in a way that they might not before. So there's a number of versions of budget games of one kind or another. There's one in Maryland called the Maryland Budget Game, which is put together by the Maryland Budget and Tax Policy Institute and the University of Baltimore. But there's a number of others like this where basically the game is to figure out how you can actually balance the budget in creative ways, and what the game allows you to do is to see what different things cost and see the effects of revenue raising options or budget cuts and how that kind of influences both the short term and the long term kind of budget balance.
Matt, serving citizens is tactic 5. It seems self-explanatory, but would you tell us more about it?
Surveying citizens, I mean, there's some kind of very easy to use free tools out there that, you know, public managers can take a look at. One is SurveyMonkey.com, SurveyConsole.com, SurveyGizmo.com, and you'll see, I think, that many of these things are very, very easy to kind of customize to use in different kinds of settings. In terms of aggregation, aggregating opinions, as I said before, is probably the newest and most quickly evolving kind of technology. The White House has used it somewhat with a tool called ThinkUp, which tries to track some of the ripples on Twitter and Facebook and other kinds of social media sites that kind of have some kind of themes or keywords in common with the kind of policies that the administration is working on. But again, aggregation is something that's quite new, and I think it's going to be evolving a lot over the next couple of years.
Matt, I'd like to talk about Tactic 7, the ranking and identifying of ideas and solutions. Could you tell us a little bit about it, what it offers those who use it, and what are some of the limitations and possible examples of this tactic in use today?
Sure. So this basically is, when you hear the term crowdsourcing, this is the kind of thing that people are talking about. And basically, some kind of a site which allows people to propose ideas or solutions to a particular issue. And then often what's part of the technology as well is giving people a chance to kind of vote, comment on them or vote on them, so that you get not just a whole batch of ideas, but then you get the crowd to basically help you figure out which have the most potential or which are the most worth a kind of a closer look. It certainly taps into quite easily a whole lot of skills and knowledge of people who are outside government, and not only in terms of kind of getting them to give their ideas, but also then giving them a chance to actually kind of scrutinize other people's ideas and see which ones they like and which ones they don't. And again, it's something you can cast quite a wide net, so you can get people from, you know, all over the world, in fact, to actually be part of this kind of process. Now, if you're not, like all the other kinds of tools we've been talking about here, if you're not kind of proactive about recruitment, you may not get a large crowd. So there's obviously recruitment work that has to happen in addition to simply kind of putting the site out there. And of course, if you want to have a relatively representative set of people kind of giving their ideas and prioritizing, that is also a big piece as far as the recruitment. You've got to figure out who you think are going to be less likely to participate and focus more of your recruitment time on those sets of people. Some agencies have kind of injected a little even more kind of fun into this. Like for example, Maine or Texas, which has become kind of the poster child for crowdsourcing. What they do is they actually have created their own little virtual currency called InnoBucks. And so people, when they propose ideas or comment on other people's ideas or participate in other ways, they get a certain number of InnoBucks, and those things are then things that the InnoBucks they can redeem for, you know, various prizes, you know, gift certificate at a local restaurant or, you know, police department t-shirt or things like that. So again, it's something that kind of makes the whole process a little bit more fun than simply a dry kind of a thing. This whole idea, though, of crowdsourcing is, you know, one thing to kind of keep in mind is that if what you're doing is simply gathering new ideas and solutions from citizens, it's terrific, but there's no guarantee there that government is going to actually have the wherewithal to implement these things. So if you're doing something, a kind of a crowdsourcing initiative, you need to be thinking about that aspect and what is it that you can kind of bring into the process or include in the strategy that will actually get people to kind of commit some of their own time and energy and their organizations they belong to actually implement these things rather than simply creating a much larger kind of laundry list for things that people want government to do.
Matt, Tactic 8 involves working with citizens to identify and prioritize problems that government can fix. Would you tell us a little bit more about this tactic, what it offers, some of its limitations, and possibly identify some of the best examples of its use today?
Well, the idea here is that you're using people to be kind of intelligent sensors of the world around them, basically tapping into the fact that people know about where the potholes are, where the graffiti is, or other kinds of water leaks, broken streetlights, litter, all kinds of things like that they know about, and kind of using the technology that's available now on most people's cell phones to actually give them a chance to quickly and immediately kind of report some of those kinds of problems to you so that you can figure out what to do. Some of these kinds of processes, in fact, also build in some kind of a prioritization kind of process so that people not only are reporting some of these kinds of problems, that they're also then looking at the site and figuring out which ones are more important than others so that you get a sense of, you know, what does the neighborhood think about which aspect of the streetscape need to be fixed first or things like that. By the way, some of the best examples of this are local examples like DC 311 in Washington, and then some of the worldwide ones like C-Click-Fix, which is our open street map, which work in lots of different communities. Again, there's kind of the same limitations with crowdsourcing, is that, you know, there's no guarantee that government is going to have the resources to fix all the problems or all the potholes or the graffiti that citizens want. So it's important to kind of think about that aspect of things, about how things are actually going to be implemented.
What about Tactic 9, helping citizens to visualize geographic data? Would you tell us a little bit more about it, what it offers, its limitations, and give us some examples of its use today?
Well, this is one that's neat, if particularly when people are dealing with kinds of land use kinds of decisions or planning, and you need to help them kind of visualize what they're talking about or what the different consequences might be of building something in a particular location or changing the way the streets are routed or things like that. And so there are kind of basic open source kinds of tools like Google Maps or Virtual Earth, which can be modified somewhat to help you do this. And then there's much more specific kinds of tools like CommunityViz.com or MetroQuest, which give people a chance to kind of modify it to their particular community. And there's a number of nonprofits and planning consultants which specialize in this kind of work. In New York City, there's actually a project called Envisioning Development, which includes a number of these kinds of tools, which gives people a chance to kind of figure out not only what the different kind of consequences of different land use decisions might be, but also to kind of match that against the city's uniform land use review procedure, which is what kind of guides how all those decisions get made.
Matt, the final tactic that you identify is helping citizens to balance budget and revenue options. First up, would you tell us a little bit about this tactic? What are some of the benefits and limitations, and where is it in use today?
These online tools are part of a really quickly emerging type of engagement called participatory budgeting, which started out actually in Latin America, in Brazil, and in other cities in South America. In a really large way. And initially, it was all a face-to-face kind of a process. And in some of these cities, thousands of people are now part of an annual procedure where they get a chance to actually figure out what the local budget is going to look like for their city. More recently, some of those cities have included kind of online elements to those kinds of projects. And then in places like Chicago, the 49th Ward, and then in some cities in California, they're using both the kind of online tools, which give people a chance to see how different budget decisions will face, you know, change the bottom line. And they use those in concert with kind of face-to-face meetings where people get together and talk about the kind of general priorities that they have for their neighborhood or their city and how those ought to be upheld in the budget.
Matt, your report does a wonderful job of identifying common sense scenarios that a lot of public managers and frontline folks will face, and it marries them up with important tactics and tools. It really makes for a nice how-to guide. What advice would you give frontline managers who are dealing with a lot of the public engagement initiatives that are around open government and transparency?
Well, one thing is you know, don't do it alone. You know, basically that this kind of work in particular, you're rewarded by reaching out to other allies to actually work with you on it. And this is something that is still quite uncommon in this kind of field. I mean, collaboration is increasingly common, I think, and lots of other types of policy making. But in engagement, I mean, in my experience, local governments, agencies, all kinds of groups, they tend to kind of just focus on it in terms of their own particular needs and interests. And they don't think to actually collaborate with other groups who may have overlapping needs and interests. And that's, I think, a real opportunity lost. So thinking about how do you collaborate when you do engagement, I think, is a really important thing to keep in mind. And the second thing is to always be aware of the fact that this is a two-way street, that it's not just about your particular goals or needs and reaching out to the public. It's about what are their goals and needs as far as reaching out to you and kind of recognizing that relationship is part of what's going to have to be negotiated through the course of any kind of successful engagement effort. You got to be open to what citizens want, and they need to understand what you need and want as part of the whole process.
Matt, what does the future hold in this area?
I that's a big question. I think that a couple of things that seem likely, and I think they're quite positive. One is increasingly blurring the lines between and kind of interweaving face-to-face and online interaction as part of this engagement work. And then the other thing, I think, is to move beyond what we have tended to do, which is this very kind of temporary, crisis-based or issue-based type of engagement where people are kind of issue after issue, policy after policy, doing the same hard work of recruiting participants, designing the process, making it all work, to a more permanent, more ongoing kind of a structure where you don't have to do that recruitment work every time the same way, where you've got kind of more stable networks of people out there who you're connected to that are there, who are willing to kind of be talking about some of the issues or decisions that are on your plate, and that also have opportunities to tell you about some of the issues or concerns that they have. The greatest potential, I think, of social media is to create those kinds of networks of people that communities need, that agencies need, to be able to kind of have not just a series of one-off relationships with citizens around a particular issue or decision, but a more stable, long-term relationship which can enable them to kind of do more of these different kinds of things that can be positive benefits of engagement.
That's a wonderful way to end the conversation, Matt. I want to thank you for your time today, but more importantly, I want to thank you for your recent IBM Center report, Using Online Tools to Engage and Be Engaged by the Public.
Thanks so much. It's been a great conversation.
This has been a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Matt Leininger, author of the IBM Center report, Using Online Tools to Engage and Be Engaged by the Public. You may order or download a free copy of this IBM Center report at businessofgovernment.org. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.